From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Fighting tyranny and government overreach. This is the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio.
And welcome to the Mark Morano Show here on TNT Radio, coming at you the week of October 22nd, 2022. We have a just overflow edition of the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio today. We're going to be joined in a moment or a few minutes by our guest, Dane Wigington of Geoengineering Watch. And we're going to find out some things. For instance, why did Joe Biden on August 9th, 2022 say the weather may be beyond our control for now? And what is Bill Gates doing with trying to dim the sun? And why is China's role in seeking to, quote, control our weather with efforts like cloud seeding and artificial rain? And why does China have a weather modification department? We're going to find out answer to all of those questions on what is government attempting to do by monkeying around with our weather. But before we get to that, and probably after we get to that, I got to tell you about my big trip to London. I just got back this week. I was in London all week, and I met up with Lord Christopher Monckton, the former Thatcher advisor, an old friend going back to the 2000. I guess I first met him in 2009, and maybe it was even 2008 at a Heartland event. But Christopher Monckton has been a longtime friend. And we got to do some real hijinks over the years at UN climate summits. In fact, Monckton is banned for life. Maybe I'll tell that story later in the program after the interview with Geoengineering Watch. But I went to London to what was billed as a Green Davos Forum. And this was a pretty, I shouldn't say ritzy. This is the ritziest event I'd ever been to at the Dorchester Hotel in London. For those of you not in London, this is equivalent to the Ritz, Four Seasons, Ritz-Carlton, whatever you want to call it. This was one of the nicest hotels I'd ever seen. And it was incredible. Rooftop receptions. This was all for the investor class of the climate industry. Entrepreneurs, investors, millionaires, billionaires who show up at this. Well, the organizer really did an incredible thing. He invited Monckton and I to essentially be the toads in the punch bowl, as I was advised to say, as opposed to turds in the punch bowl. But we were the toads. We were the fly in the buttermilk. And the idea is we were there to create some conflict. And this did create conflict long before we even spoke. They gave Monckton a keynote address on how climate is not driving a climate. Climate is no climate emergency or climate crisis. And they gave us a debate, a two-on-two debate against two climate activists with a moderator in front of hundreds of people at this London Green Davos Forum. And again, this is a huge event. The next one's going to be in Beverly Hills with Hollywood celebrities. The next one after that, I think, is going to be in, I want to say Dubai or somewhere, United Arab Emirates. I think it's travels the world. And these are seeking. And a lot of this is, you know, interesting stuff. People who have water cleaning devices, people who have major advances in renewable and alternative energy. I mean, it's fascinating stuff. This is the inventor class. These are the people, many of them tinkerers, coming up with stuff and then trying to get funding. But of course, the problem is that they are married, wedded, fused, if you will, with the United Nations agenda, with the World Economic Forum agenda, with the Green New Deal, with the net zero. At least they are in by the organizational standards. And I'm about to tell you that that is not the case by the standards of the audience members and the attendees at this incredible event. So what happened was one of our debate opponents literally pulled out when he got heat, and he said, called us climate science deniers. We were called odious and it was noxious by things like from everything from Daily Coast to the Smog blog. And then the UK climate minister pulled out of the event. And the implication was that he didn't want to appear with two climate deniers. And of course, Christopher Monckton and I don't deny anything. That's a smear to call us climate deniers. It's trying to link us to Holocaust deniers. At any rate, this event created huge controversy for us going in, and I say, and I give full credit to the organizer for not bowing out, for not giving up, for not giving in to this insane pressure of the media and the climate establishment. They held strong, and this event was, again, it's called the Green Davos Forum, and I'm just trying to get you the formal name, so any of you out there want to look it up, because I keep forgetting it. They call it Global Investment in Sustainable Development, or the CC Forum, and it's been around for years. It's been all over the world, and they gave us a panel. The discussion was debate, the economics of rising temperatures, global warming as the world's most pressing problem. And this was a debate that was only scheduled to be for about 35, 40 minutes. And I'll tell you what happened at the debate in a minute. But the most shocking thing that happened was that the audience ate this up, loved it. Laughter, applause. And we were one of the people in the audience estimated that 40% of the audience was supporting Moncton and I as we denounced the net zero agenda, the Green New Deal agenda, the climate agenda, as we denounced the Great Reset, as we denounced the gas-powered car bans, as we denounced the credit cards that are going to monitor your carbon footprint and cut off the spending when you hit your limit, as we denounced the net zero of high yield agriculture fertilizer bans, as we denounced energy restrictions and energy blackouts and its effect in the developing world on the 1 billion plus people without adequate running water and electricity, we got real traction. And this was the shocker at this debate in London on October 18th. The audience was given a chance. They didn't want it to end. They voted to give us another 15 minutes on stage for the debate. And the moderator, the speaker behind us, agreed to forego his speech in order, he canceled his speech in order to let us go longer. That is what happens, my friends, when you have debate. And so even an audience like this that is associated with the climate agenda and the Davos agenda just craves to hear something new, different, something to stimulate their mind and actually validate their worldview. Because many of these people just go along because it's an access point. They go along with the agenda, at least on paper, so they can get access to these events, to this investing, to these ideas, to the networking connections you make. So this is what we went into. And so the debate I found to be exhilarating. One of our debate opponents, and let me get you his name because I don't want to butcher it for you. But his name was Gunter Pauly. He's an entrepreneur, and he was a former member of the Club of Rome. Now, I thought he was going to be like, this was going to be, you know, intense disagreement and fight. Turns out he called net zero the opium of the masses. He left the Club of Rome. He was against COVID lockdowns and authoritarian restrictions. And he was totally pro-development in the developing world. He didn't seem to like he was opposed to fossil fuels. It got to the point where I offered to shake his hand at the end of the debate, and I praised him publicly. And then I was even shocked. I asked the audience, do you not support net zero? How many people are opposed? And the moderator said that there's many different views there. So this is not a lockstep group. These are, in many cases, conservative libertarian. After the debate, by the way, I was approached by unbelievable number of people telling me how much they loved it, telling me how much they loved the fact that we were trying to reach some sort of agreement. And we found agreement on many things, like I said, calling net zero the opium of the masses. And they were saying they were conservatives, they were libertarians, and they love to hear my voice. They want more debates at future events like this. I don't know that they'll be able to do that because of all the intense pressure that the organizer was under. I don't think he could get it. For instance, the one in Beverly Hills that's going to feature Hollywood celebrities. I can't imagine many Hollywood celebrities going to an event that featured a climate denier in their minds. They would probably bow out, and the organizers probably wouldn't invite us because they don't want to deal with that kind of politics. But it was also funny is after the debate, we were whisked away to Great Britain GB News. TV studios to be interviewed by the none other than Mark Stein. And that was a lot of fun. We did a 10-minute segment with Christopher Monckton and I, and we were told it was rated one of the highest segments we got. We had great comedic fun on the air. Mark Stein loved it. And this was written up even in places like the Smog blog. So this just goes to show you, when you allow for human interaction, you don't embrace censorship, you don't embrace the idea of just one narrative only, there can be no dissent, then you suddenly get a dialogue. You suddenly get eyes opening. I mean, I know that people there learned a lot. We went through numbers, stats, statistics, policy agreements, talked about how global emissions wouldn't even be impacted by, you know, whatever Europe did or whatever the United States did. It couldn't possibly impact the weather. So what happened was, I even got my, you know, perceptions changed, because I now realize that the many of these people who go to this are seeking this, you know, funding, and or are the engineering class who are coming up with, you know, incredible technological developments. They're not as easy to demonize. Remember, I used to demonize people who are now my heroes on the COVID lockdown, people like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. or Naomi Wolf, or aspects of Andava Shiva, who's fighting Bill Gates and Facebook. And this is just the importance of the old world. Let's call it the old guard. This is how it used to be, 70s, 80s, 90s, at least I would say up until 9/11 terror attacks. That sort of made certain opinions verboten. You weren't allowed to say anything. You weren't allowed to oppose the wars publicly. You were seen as un-American. I mean, I'm sure it's all cyclical. You know, we went through this. World War I had brutal repression against anyone who dissented on the World War I war effort, particularly in the United States. But it was so incredible to just sort of have a flashback of the way life used to be, and you could actually engage in ideas. Now, I'm actually following up next week in New York City with another climate debate by the Metropolitan, I think, Republican Club in New York City. I'm going in person again. That's also refreshing. I'm tired of all the Zoom stuff that people have been promoting for years. It's great to see everyone back out in person and meeting. But it is just a very sad commentary on the world that we cannot allow these kind of debates to happen, because, and the reason, of course, is the climate activists, the climate establishment know full well that when an audience is exposed to dissenting views on climate, their whole world, the climate establishment world, comes crashing down. And that is the real reason. In fact, in 2007, there was a 3-on-3 debate. Richard Lindzen, Philip Stott, and Michael Crichton debated the Union of Concerned Scientists, NASA's Gavin Schmidt, and another climate alarmist. I can't remember at the top of my head, but it was a New York City audience of hundreds of people. They voted before global warming was a crisis. They sat through a 90-minute 3-on-3 debate with credentialed experts. And afterward, the audience completely flipped. And not only that, but Gavin Schmidt, who's now, he was a NASA scientist at the time, but now he's NASA's lead global warming scientist. He said in 2007, right after that debate, that they got their rear ends handed to them, the climate alarmists, the climate fear mongers. And he said, these kind of debates are no longer worth doing. We were outgunned. We were outcharmed. We can't allow these debates to happen. And you know what happened after that? He never allowed that to happen again. He was on John Stossel, and you can look this up. Look up Gavin Schmidt and Roy Spencer, John Stossel. He refused to even appear in the same stage with a climate skeptic scientist of probably equal or better credentials than him, because Roy Spencer was a former NASA scientist, climatologist, meteorologist. And so Gavin Schmidt would walk off the set when they brought on the skeptical Roy Spencer from NASA, because he did not want to give essentially allow what you would call an equalization. The idea is, if you appear on stage together, you raise the status of your opponent. And that can't be so, because if your opponent doesn't agree with you that there's a climate emergency and a climate crisis, you can't legitimize that opponent. Ergo, there's no communication, no debate. This is the world in which we now lived in. And I actually, in my book, Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, credit that 2007 New York City debate with probably the end of any ability to have climate debates. Now, it goes in cycles, though, because what happened was, you know, Climategate hit, and then they allowed a lot of debate because they had to sort of recover from that. But by the time 2015, 16, and certainly by the time Donald Trump comes along, all climate debate stopped. Any skeptics on climate dissenters on any mainstream outlet, from the BBC to the New York, not New York Times, but the ABC News or CNN, all just completely dried up, because the mentality then became, we cannot allow another Donald Trump. And Donald Trump would not have been created without the media. Ergo, we must suppress any voices that sound similar to Donald Trump in the media. And that's literally what happened. So we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, we are going to be joined by our special guest, Dane Wingington of Geoengineering Watch. And we're going to be asking him, what is Joe Biden talking about when he says the weather may be beyond our control for now? We're going to ask him about what Bill Gates is doing by trying to dim the sun. And we're going to ask him why China has efforts to, quote, control the weather with cloud seeding and has a weather modification department. Does it sound scary? Well, it should sound scary. This is Mark Morano for The Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We'll be right back after these messages.
Joseph Arthur on TNT Radio.
Well, Rolling Stone and NPR and any other publication that told parents not to consider rainbow-colored fentanyl an attack on children, and the bizarre mantelpiece they picked up in semi-defense of the cartel's reasoning behind this, needs to come out with a public apology and a reframe of this story, and they need to do it now. And they wrote that weeks before Halloween, when obviously there should be nothing but concern for the vulnerability of children regarding this issue. Anyone with kids knows that half of the battle of having an infant is policing what they put in their mouth. And any small child around a colorful pill is like a lamb being led to slaughter if that colorful pill is fentanyl. Rolling Stone points out that kids don't have disposable income. Thanks, Rolling Stone. So, of course, these drugs couldn't be marketed to them.
Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
G'day, Bob's Removals.
Oh, hi. I have a TV I'd like to move.
Just a TV?
Yes.
Where to?
Over near the window.
Right.
You wouldn't call a removalist just to shift your telly, would you? So why call an ambulance when it's not really needed, and your doctor, pharmacist or 13 Health could help? Remember, only call 000 for an ambulance if you believe it's life-threatening, critical or serious. Authorised by the Queensland Government, Brisbane.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds, and they do it by the types of hosts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis, by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNTRadio.live.
And welcome back to the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. Well, as promised, we have Dane Wingington of Geoengineering Watch joining us. Dane is the lead researcher for the website geoengineeringwatch.org. He's also the executive producer of the climate engineering film called The Dimming. And he has a background in solar energy. He's a former employee of the Bechtel Power Corporation. And he can, a couple of things. He's also he's featured in a cover article of the world's largest renewable energy magazine called Home Power. So welcome to the program, Dane.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for your willingness to address the climate engineering issue. And on the so-called renewable energy part, we can discuss that if you want, but certainly that is not what it's being peddled as. And the fact that I'm on it doesn't mean I'm a proponent of that being a savior for us all. It's not.
Yeah. In terms of solar wind, I always say, hey, I mean, currently we might require a huge reliance on China, and it also has a lot of issues with still technological development, and it's not ready for, I think, for prime time, to say the least. But what's interesting, I always say you can never really oppose solar and wind, particularly solar, because you never know what kind of technological advancements could happen in the future. So I never say I'm against it, but I say, why would you ban energy that works for something that can't replace it right now? That's my simplified take on it. But in terms of geoengineering, okay, I was going to start with this. In August of this year, Joe Biden gave a rather bizarre speech and statement. He was talking about the Kentucky floods at the time. And he said about these floods, it's not like it's beyond our control. The weather may be beyond our control for now, but it's not beyond our control. At any rate, so I did a story back then saying how Biden, Bill Gates, and China are now seeking to control the weather. You don't like the weather? Pass a law or push pork barrel spending to alter the weather. But then I also mentioned Bill Gates funding the sun dimming plan, which he thinks will save the human race. He wants to block the sun with geoengineering to stop global warming. And also the World Economic Forum touted China's efforts to control the weather, in quotes, with cloud seeding to create 55 billion tons of artificial rain. And they have a weather modification department. So how does all this fit into the climate, and what's actually going on with geoengineering of our climate, Dane?
Well, first, this is mass theater. They're pretending that they don't already completely manipulate weather around the globe. About Bill Gates and his participation in the smoke and mirrors projects of dimming the sun by putting a balloon up and releasing a few pounds of particles. I mean, this is complete theater. We have military tankers like KC-135s that carry 100 tons of material at once. We know these programs have been operational for many decades. In fact, first deployed immediately after World War II. So again, we see a lot of theater, a lot of pretending from this administration and others that they could, may, might do this someday. These programs have been fully operational for many decades. We have a condition now called global dimming. How much of the sun's direct rays no longer reach the surface of the sun, and that's about 20-30%, depending on where you're at. The sun's rays that reach the surface now that are being blocked, about 20%. And what's perplexing, Mark, is we have the whole green community, the environmentalists and the organizations that support them, not willing to talk about climate engineering because their 501c3 nonprofits depend on them not talking about it. We know that. Our attorneys at Geoengineering Watch have spoken to their attorneys. They don't want to jeopardize their 501s. And climate engineering completely decimates all three primary forms of so-called green energy. Blocks the sun, radically reduces solar power, reduces overall wind speeds, reduces wind power. And the droughts, Mark, you see all over the globe, horrific droughts that are a direct result of climate engineering, no hydropower. Why aren't they talking about it?
Well, now see, this is all very fascinating. I'd like to hear where, in my dealings with climate scientists, I don't hear these kind of allegations, and I don't necessarily, I'm very skeptical that you could look around and say droughts are caused by that. But I'd like to know more about what you're saying. I'm not going to dismiss you or anything like that. But it's not something that my research has found or that the scientists I talk to have talked about. In fact, let me just give you what one of them has said. The HARP program is closed, and even if it was still open, the amount of power it projected was minuscule compared to the sun's effect on the atmosphere at any given moment. Weather modification has been tried several times with limited success. Cloud seeding is a hit or miss proposition. The atmosphere is chaotic, but sometimes people latch on to the butterfly effect. And then he also shoots down what I get asked about a lot, things like chemtrails. And he likens these now to conspiracy theories. So why shouldn't my listeners believe what you're saying? Why should they believe what you're saying and not dismiss them as sort of not supportable by the evidence?
certainly I understand their skepticism, even though I have a background in renewable energy. It took me about 18 months of research before I couldn't ignore the validity of this issue. In regards to what's happening in our skies, what we're seeing behind aircraft, we have up-close film footage of these aircraft taken at altitude, nozzles visible, turning dispersions on and off. So I would simply not ask people to believe me, but to believe what they can see with their own eyes. In regards to those in the so-called climate science community not being willing to speak about this issue, the illegal federal gag order on all National Weather Service and all NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration employees, is certainly a big part of that problem. And we know what happens with whistleblowers, from Julian Assange. In regards to the effectiveness of these types of operations, which amount to weather warfare, if we take Project Popeye in Vietnam as an example, historically documented, so successful at creating extra precipitation over the Ho Chi Minh Trail, augmenting precipitation, that by 1976, the UN passed the international treaty to forbid weather modification for wartime purposes. So the effectiveness is certainly historically documented. And if people would search geoengineering drought, they'll see the entire climate science community acknowledges that if they were to geoengineer, as if they are not already, that it would cause protracted drought in many regions. That's very scientifically documented. You put too many particles in the atmosphere, too many condensation nuclei, it blocks evaporation, that affects the hydrological cycle, and too many particles keep the droplets from combining and falling as rain. So, Mark, do you remember in the Olympics when the Chinese government said, don't worry, they'll make sure it doesn't rain?
Yes, I do remember that. I know Russia has also claimed success with creating snowstorms and getting rid of rain as well. But yes, I do remember that.
Correct. Yeah. So there's one other aspect, too, that they might look at with the Chinese government. And you just mentioned creating snowstorms. If your listeners search Chinese scientists create artificial snowstorm, they'll see Fox News covered it, Popular Science, yeah. MSNBC. So they can nucleate cloud moisture to create frozen precipitation out of what should have been liquid precipitation, engineering winter.
All right. Well, let's talk, some of the history of this. Some of the history in terms of the climate change debate. 1978 episode of In Search of Leonard Nimoy. They talked about, I don't know if it's called geoengineering, but he called it a spectacular solution. They were worried about the coming ice age and global cooling. And they wanted to melt the Arctic ice cap by adding black soot or diverting Arctic rivers. And that would help loosen the polar ice caps. They were worried it was going to get too big. In 2018, the UK Independent, the first ever sun dimming experiment, will mimic volcanic eruption in an attempt to reverse global warming. Now, Bill Gates has given a lot of money and research, and I believe he's involved with Harvard, to spray dust in the atmosphere to block the sun. Now, you sort of thought that was more of a misdirection. What exactly are Bill Gates' efforts to dim the sun, to inject these aerosols into the atmosphere? What is it actually going to do? What are they covering up? They're calling it a chemical cloud that could put an end to global warming.
The part Bill Gates is playing is to pretend, again, that these operations aren't fully deployed on a scale that's unimaginably larger than anything that's being openly discussed. We're working with a major testing institution, one of the most renowned in the world. The last 100 precipitation tests we've taken, all containing climate engineering elements, aluminum, barium, strontium, manganese. The amount of material in that precipitation was quantified, and we have then calculated the amount of material being dumped as part of these programs globally on an annual basis to be somewhere in the range of 60 to 70 million tons. It's ubiquitous. These climate engineering elements are now ubiquitous in everything because they're, of course, dispersed all over the globe. So again, the part Gates is playing, along with David Keith, other recognized geoengineers, David Keith from Harvard, as you mentioned, they're simply trying to create a facade and the perception that these programs are just proposals, when in fact they've been long-term ongoing realities.
Wow. So when you talk about, first of all, what Joe Biden was talking about, did that make any sense to you during the Kentucky floods, when he just said, we can't control the weather. Yeah, he sounded like, you know, he sounded like typical Joe Biden. But what is the United States' role, I guess, currently in this, in your view?
Their role is massive, but I don't want to take away the role of all other governments. We have documents at geoengineeringwatch.org, Senate document 800 pages long that outlines global cooperation, even between otherwise adversarial countries, China, US, Russia, because you can't just geoengineer over your own country without affecting the entire world. So they all have their reasons and their agendas for doing so, but there's no question they are participating. We have an interview with an insider that went over great detail on the mechanisms of that participation. So when we have Biden again pretending that they're not a part of these programs, it's simply or more smoke and mirrors. And as far as the U.S. military's involvement, we know the U.S. military has three times more aerial tankers that are used in these programs, three times more than all other militaries combined. So certainly no arguing the U.S. military is the biggest player in this scenario, but our soldiers are certainly not being told they're doing something that's malevolent. It's just like the pilots that dropped Agent Orange on our soldiers in Vietnam. They weren't told this is going to kill your pal on the ground. They're being told they're doing something that's necessary, beneficial, and it's all compartmentalized. We're communicating with some in the military. We interviewed two U.S. Air Force generals in the film, The Dimming, that acknowledged the existence of these programs. So we're trying to wake up our military brothers and sisters that what they're being involved with is absolutely not in their best interest or their children or anyone else.
All right. I'm reading here from the World Economic Forum in Davos. They talk about, well, first of all, China's weather modification employs 35,000 people across China. It helps increase rain or snow. And it says that technology works by sprinkling clouds with dry ice and silver iodide. So the question is, what is this dry ice and a silver iodide that they sprinkle? How long is they affect? You say it affects other countries. Is it like a, is that a few hours, weeks, months, years when they sprinkle these clouds? Let's just sort of break that down. How long does that last in the atmosphere?
It depends on the particle. And again, they're pretending that they're using those elements, but we know they're using other elements. Our lab tests prove that they openly state the elements you named because that sounds very benign to people. Most people wouldn't really accept being sprayed with aluminum nanoparticles, barium, strontium, polymer fibers, and graphene, which we now know are in the mix as well, can be used for biological carriers that can carry a biological from a cloud to the ground. So let's tie Bill Gates back into this. The world's second most recognized geoengineer, Dr. Ken Caldera, who worked for Stanford. He's a former Department of Defense scientist. We have an audio of him on the record, his voice stating that what he did for the Department of Defense, designed ways of spraying pathogens into clouds to infect the populations below. Who does he work for now? He works for Bill Gates. Bill Gates called him his, quote, most amazing teacher. So we have some very interesting components in this equation, and none of them bode well.
Wow. Okay. Well, the other thing they say here is, China creates 55 billion tons of artificial rain. This is according to World Economic Forum. Is that a lot or is that a drop in the bucket? 55 billion tons of artificial rain. What's the scale? What's the significance of that claim anyway?
Well, water is heavy and that's clearly not enough. There's huge segments of China that are in protracted drought, just like the U.S. Their crops are collapsing. We have other areas in deluge, and the overall effect of putting these particles in the atmosphere is to diminish overall global rainfall. Yes, we have deluge in places, but the atmosphere holds 7% more moisture for every degree C of warming. It must rain more if the planet is warming, but it's not. And again, if your listeners search geoengineering creates drought, they'll find every science institution in the world acknowledges this. A volcanic eruption, which is what they're trying to mimic in their own words, that also creates drought. We had Mount Pinatubo blow in 1992, I believe. That one volcano reduced global rainfall by 50% for that year. That's extraordinary. And that's what putting these particles in the atmosphere does.
Wow. So where does this heading then? You know, we saw with, you know, COVID, you had every government in the world, leaders just going abuse of emergency power, power hungry,
yes.
literally trying to, you know, everything from closing churches to business to schools to canceling weddings. They were power hungry. What is the point? If what you're saying is true and all of this is much more advanced than anyone I talk to would ever acknowledge or knows, what's the end game and where are they headed?
I would put it in the same basket. And as far as COVID and the agendas and objectives behind it, and if we look back at the start of our weekly broadcast at geoengineeringwatch.org, we're non-political, no advertising. The start of our weekly update broadcast called Global Alert News, every single week, we show a film of U.S. President Lyndon Johnson in 1962 on film, on the record, raving like a lunatic, stating that we had the power to control the world's cloud layer then in 1962. And quote, he who controls the weather controls the world. Let's add a few other components to that. He who controls the weather controls precipitation, thus controls food supplies, thus controls populations, thus controls the world. So it is about power and control. Ultimately, there's no benevolence in these programs whatsoever.
All right. Well, we have to take a break right now. We're talking to Dane Wigington of Geoengineering Watch. We're talking about geoengineering of the climate. This is Mark Morano on TNT and the Mark Morano Show. We'll be right back after these messages.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
I've talked a lot about Europe and the eastern part of the United States getting cold from mid-November into December at least. And the latest long-range forecast is starting to confirm that. There's a lot of blocking, locking over the top. And when the block locks, the weather rocks. Remember that. Tell that to other people. You'll impress them with it. But what about the Far East? Well, the Japanese model is in, and it says this is going to be one nasty winter in the Far East. It could be as bad as the winter of 2012-2013, which went down as one of the coldest winters in China in the last 50 years. And, of course, this is a major player as far as energy goes, that area of the world. It's interesting in that when you get cold in the Far East, you're usually cold in Eastern North America and Western Europe. It's called teleconnections. There, you got a great little saying to say, and you learned about teleconnections. You're ready to be a weather person. This is WeatherBell.com meteorologist Joe Bastardi for TNT Radio asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you've got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Many power grids worldwide are in grave danger of collapse from the growing amount of intermittent power sourced from wind turbines. Covering the countryside and offshore coastal regions with wind turbines is insane. English journalist James Dellingpole has described wind farms as a cancer and that he wants to raise public awareness of just how disastrous these bat-chomping, bird-slicing eco-crucifixes are in every single respect. These remarks nail the reality of wind farms to a T. When the wind doesn't blow, there is no power. And when gale force winds hit, the turbines are shut down. It's a Goldilocks moment. When the winds are just right, the power produced is at an optimum. In reality, industry and households require power 24/7, not just when the wind blows.
St. Joseph's Indian School is much more than a school for Native American children. Since 1927, it's provided children the education, health care, and support they need to succeed. Learn more at stjo.org today.
Mark Morano on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Mark Morano Show on TNT Radio. We're here with our special guest, Dane, I keep wanting to say Dale, but Dane Wigington of Geoengineering Watch. And we're talking about altering the weather modification department. We're talking about Russia, China, US, and all these attempts. So, Dane, you were talking here about droughts. You said it was well documented. What impact are you reporting that geoengineering has on droughts?
The climate engineers have long since had the technology to completely shut the flow of precipitation off to any region they want. Let me give an example. Right after 9/11, when we had the list of countries that were to be targeted, a list that clearly existed before 9/11, that list was given to General Wesley Clark. Every single Middle Eastern country on that list subsequently underwent a once in 1,000 year drought. statistically, mathematically, it's impossible that they would have all undergone the same conditions unless there was a factor we're not being told about. That factor is climate engineering. We had the leaders of those countries, in the case of Iran, on the floor of the UN stating that NATO was cutting off their precipitation because they can see it. They have sophisticated atmospheric monitoring equipment as well. So when they put too many condensation nuclei in the sky, too much spraying of fine particles, that has the effect of diminishing rainfall. And we know that from volcanic eruptions as well. Again, very well documented. We can see this happening on satellite imagery, Mark, off the U.S. West Coast. We can see them breaking storms apart. We can see the aerosol operations. So we can speculate about the agendas and objectives, but the fact that this is going on and diminishing overall precipitation to many regions, absolutely beyond dispute.
Well, the only thing I'd say is, you know, in terms of droughts, I mean, it depends. The Earth is very old, so I hate to hear claims of unprecedented drought or one in 500, because unless it's the same exact spot, there's always going to be a record drought. There's always going to be that. If you even look at the data, you know, global droughts haven't really changed or have been a slight decline on 100 year timescales. So I don't know that that's convincing to me, that claim on the droughts. And I'm not endorsing necessarily anything you're saying, or I'm not fighting you on it. I'm just saying it's a fascinating topic. And I was actually just talking to meteorologists actually about this in geoengineering. But let me ask you this question. I get questions all the time on the HARP when I do speaking, and all the scientists I work with, and just to be clear, the scientists I work with are not, they're not part of the like climate science establishment, meaning, you know, current NOAA, NASA buying in the climate crisis of man-made CO2. They're the dissenters who've actually given up many times, you know, tenured professorships, jobs in the government to fight the battle that's seeking the political control by using this. But tell me about, first of all, the HARP program. But I get asked about that all the time. I know it's no longer in operation. That seems to be a source of a lot of demonization. What's your take on that?
If I can answer that in 1 second to back up on the drought situation.
Yeah, sure.
What I would acknowledge, the whole environmental community blaming all the protracted droughts on global warming alone is what we have a problem with, in that, again, on a warming planet, if it's warming as they say, we should have more rain, not less. And the drought-causing effects of that kind of interference in the atmosphere, again, well documented. And if you ever want to host a fact-for-fact debate with one of these scientists and myself in a very calm, professional fashion, I would be glad to furnish the facts to back it up. So I just wanted to offer that. In regard to HARP, as you mentioned earlier, official sources claimed that they shut the facility down, proving it was all just a big conspiracy, that they're interfering with the weather. And all of that was nonsense. They never shut HARP down. It was a sleight of hand to make it look like it was under different management. The facility was never shut down. They initially said they were about to tear it down, which of course never happened. It's still fully functional and operational today. The effects of an ionosphere heater are very well documented scientifically. They can transmit 3.5 million watts of power into the electrically charged ionosphere, causes an electrical chain reaction. Stated purpose is militarily to cause a bulge in space to create resistance for an incoming ICBM. That also pushes down on the atmosphere. That creates a high-pressure heat dome. And now we hear that term everywhere in the meteorological community, high-pressure heat dome, over and over and over, that remain in place for weeks or months. And again, we know the capability of these facilities. We know there's about 100 like them around the world. HARP is the biggest. And we simply feel these programs need to be brought to light. Investigations need to be done. No one has a right to interfere with the planet's life support systems. And the environmental community needs to admit to this. And at this point, they are simply ignoring the biggest climate disrupting factor in the equation of all. And we don't think that's acceptable.
All right. And what about hurricane tracks? I've heard research of people trying to, like, if a hurricane's barreling toward the coast, is there anything they can do or have tried to do to divert a hurricane so that it stays out at sea, or is there a way to change the track of a hurricane?
Short answer, yes. U.S. military began its hurricane modification operations in 1947, 75 years ago, with, again, Project Cirrus. And even that initial experiment caused what meteorologists believe to be significant damage by the alteration of the hurricane track. Now, they've since tried to deny it, but there was a lot of publicity about that. Their technology now is unbelievably advanced. They have patented processes that can diminish and disperse a cyclone anytime they want. And in the case of, let's take Hurricane Ian that just happened, we at geoengineeringwatch.org recorded the ground-based radio frequency microwave transmitters that are absolutely used to steer the storm. How do they do that? They have a repelling effect on the air mass that's saturated with electrically conductive particles from the seeding that's done from above. And the interaction, and we recorded all this. I encourage your listeners to search geoengineeringwatch.org controlling Hurricane Ian. And they can look at this with their own eyes, the actual recordings of the transmissions, the interactions with the storms. We did the same with Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Michael, Maria. So this technology is patented and it's existed for decades. And all we're asking at geoengineeringwatch.org is for people to look at the data. That's all we're asking for. And the environmental groups as well, all of them, I have immense disdain at this point for their lack of willingness to look at this, acknowledge this in order to protect their nonprofit status, which we don't think is okay.
All right. Well, then I guess the final question is, what, when you look at, you know, do you think the U.S. government or any of these other countries, do you think the full extent of this is going to be known? And if so, what will the impact be? In other words, if they were to stop overnight, in your view, assuming all this is happening, would the weather then be in shock? And how long would it take for a natural balance to return to our atmosphere and climate conditions?
That's a great question. It's a correct conclusion. The blowback from having this sort of straitjacket on the climate system for so many decades will certainly be immense. We can't know the full extent of that. The system has been derailed and disrupted for so long. There's immense pressure built up in it. They will do everything they can to hide these operations from public view until the last possible moment, because the liability issues are absolutely incalculable. The 800-page document I mentioned earlier has specific provisions in it for total blanket legal immunity for anyone involved with these programs for obvious reasons. Once you disrupt the entire climate system, every single weather cataclysm becomes a liability for those involved. So I would argue they're going to do everything they can to hide this until the last possible moment. But we're asking people, again, don't believe us. We're not asking anyone to believe what we say. We're asking them to look at the film footage, look at the data, look at the patents, look at the Senate documents, presidential documents, just to examine the data and decide for themselves. That's all we ask at geoengineeringwatch.org.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Dana. You know, I have to say that this is not an area I've ever dealt with. I will probably get blowback from fellow climate skeptics for even airing your views, because they'll say this is conspiracy, it's not supported, but I will let the listeners decide. This is Dane Wigington, geoengineeringwatch.org. He has all his reports, information there. And this is an issue that, you know, we know these programs have existed. We know Joe Biden's talked about it. We know Bill Gates is involved in geoengineering. We know China and we know Russia. I just have not heard it beyond and to the extent that Mr. Wigington is, but that's fascinating. Thank you very much for joining us. His website is geoengineeringwatch.org. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mark. And we hope that the climate scientists you speak of would actually consider that the global warming community is blaming many events and scenarios on global warming alone, which the blame is misplaced. It's in those many cases should be saddled with climate engineering. We're simply hoping people will actually take the time to investigate. And I thank you very much for your courage in addressing this issue. Thank you, Mark.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You too.
All right. Thanks. All right. That was absolutely fascinating. I, have never really, in all the climate conferences I go to, never really got that deep and never heard anyone go that in depth. And I would have to look at that website, look at some of these reports much further. But at any rate, moving along here, because I'm running out of time. I think I only got about 6 minutes left. I just wanted to talk about a couple key issues of the past week. I've already talked about the big London climate debate, and I hope next week to have video clips and some audio clips to play for you of how it actually went. And maybe even the Mark Stein interview, because I think that was a lot of fun. I'm actually, as I mentioned, I'm heading to New York City next week for climate debate. And then the week after that, I am heading to Cairo, Egypt, and eventually El Sharm el-Sheikh, I believe it's called, a resort on the Red Sea, a vacation spot in Egypt. And no, I'm not going on vacation. I'm going there for the UN Climate Summit. Joe Biden will also be attending, as well as a platoons of private jets and Hollywood celebrities and world leaders and corporate CEOs. And this is going to be their big bash. Of course, this is in wake of the Ukraine invasion. So it'll be interesting to see with energy blackouts, Europe fearing winter, Europe praising firewood as more valuable than gold, the United States facing all these calamities with thermostat controls in Colorado and blackouts and high energy costs, and Biden begging the OPEC and Venezuela for more oil, and the rise of China and the Russian alliance. You know what they're going to do, right? They're going to double down on green energy, double down to save the planet. No evidence will get them to back down on that. So I'll be heading there for that. Okay, one of the things I want to mention is Goldman Sachs, global head of commodities research, has come out on CNBC this week with an astounding quote and claim, and just phenomenal. It's very well done. His name is Jeff Curry, and he said, at the end of last year, overall fossil fuels represented 81% of overall energy consumption in the U.S. 10 years ago, they were at 82%. So through all the investments in renewables, you're talking about $3.8 trillion. $3.8 trillion in renewables, and they've moved fossil fuel consumption from 82% to 81% of the overall energy consumption. A drop of 1% costing nearly $4 trillion. But, you know, given the this is him quoted. This is, again, Jeff Curry, Goldman Sachs. Given the recent events and what's happened with the loss of gas and replacing it with coal, the number now is likely back up above 82%. In his summation, clearly we haven't made any progress. Well, you know what the problem is and what the United Nations is going to say and what the Biden administration is going to say. We all know where it's going. Everyone knows the end game here. $3.8 trillion was woefully inadequate. If we only move the needle 1%, and that 1% is already dissolved, and we're down to 0% change, obviously $3.8 trillion wasn't even close to enough. We need $10 trillion. We need $20 trillion. We need $30 trillion. That's the way forward. That's the only way forward. We all know where it's headed. And you don't even have to raise taxes, just print more money. This is modern monetary theory we're living under. More debt, more printing money, to hell with the taxes. You don't even have to worry about it. That is the situation. $3.8 trillion, no change. The lesson learned, I'm not saying Goldman Sachs' claim, this is how the climate activists, well, $3.8 trillion is nowhere near enough. We need more. And that's, of course, what the basis of the Inflation Reduction Act. They looked at Obama's stimulus and said, what a spectacular failure. We should triple the amount. And there you have it. That's Joe Biden's Inflation Reduction Act. So that's some of the nonsense that is happening this week. I think I only have about 2 minutes left here, but this is just bonkers. And then also this week, the Guardian newspaper, citing new research, insists the next pandemic may come from, I'm not making this headline up, melting glaciers. And this is the old Frankenstein zombie theory. The glaciers are going to melt in some old virus, the medieval plague or something, some other evil virus will be released on the public and we're all going to die. And if we don't support climate action, you're a grandma killer, because unchecked climate change leads to more deadly viruses. So climate change has now become a public health issue subject to undemocratic dictates by elected officials. This is the mentality. They want to bypass democracy in order to impose their agenda without a vote of Congress, City Hall, Parliament, State House, supervisor. advisors, you name it. That's what we're dealing with. But this has been going on for quite a while. As I detailed this even 2 years ago, it's in my book, The Great Reset, Harvard School of Medicine. They're trying to morph COVID and climate together. Remember, 2018, World Health Organization already declared climate the greatest public health threat facing the world. So they were all ready for it. So this is just, you know, continuing on the same thing. The viruses are capable of triggering an infection. In order to access whether these viruses were capable of triggering an infection, what they did is they looked at, they're calling it a nutty guardian story. The next pandemic may not come from bats or birds, from the matter in melting ice. So the findings imply as global temperatures rise, viruses and bacteria locked in glaciers and permafrost could reawaken and infect local wildlife. And you see how that's going to go. And then the wildlife will infect it to humans, and we'll be dealing with a seventh century plague. And if only we had passed the Green New Deal and installed net zero earlier, we could have saved all those lives. Oh, it's tedious, bonkers. At any rate, that's the memo. This has been Mark Morano, The Mark Morano Show, here on TNT Radio. Next week, I'll have adventures and I'll regale you with tales of my journey to New York City, first time since the Defund the Police movement has gone. And I've been there since my John Stossel interview in March of 2020, right as COVID was about to explode. In fact, John Stossel and I didn't shake hands. We elbow bumped when I saw him. But I'm going there for a debate at the Metropolitan Club. Let you know how that goes. This is Mark Morano. Stay tuned. More TNT Radio coming, but my show is over. Thank you for listening.